Welcome back. Today we're doing a deep dive into a really foundational document, a draft specification for Occupational Health and Safety, OHS, in construction.
That's right. It's from 2012, but its influence is still significant in South Africa. It really lays out how contractors have to meet the OHS Act from 93.
And our goal here is simple. Get straight to the core requirements. What does this framework really demand?
Well, what's crucial to grasp is that this isn't just a list of don'ts. It's an administrative blueprint.
Okay.
It dictates how contractors manage risk step by step and how the employer's safety agent interacts with them. It's about process, total process control.
So let's start at the beginning. Before any work actually happens on site, what are those absolute non-negotiables, the administrative hurdles?
First off, the contractor has to be proactive. They need to show they're in good standing with the compensation fund.
Which is essentially proof they're covered for worker injuries, right?
Exactly. Think of it like regulatory insurance.
Mm.
And they also have to notify the provincial director of labor for certain types of work.
And the thresholds for that notification seem quite low.
They really are. Demolition over 3 meters, any job lasting more than 30 days, or involving over 300 person days.
Wow, okay. So that catches a lot of projects.
It definitely ensures pretty wide oversight.
Which brings us to this thing called the health and safety file. You hear about it a lot. It sounds significant.
Oh, it is. It's not just a binder you stick on a shelf. It's the definitive, auditable record for the site's safety history.
Everything goes in there.
Pretty much everything.
Mm-hmm.
The contractor's H&S policy, their emergency plans, proof they notified labor.
Mm-hmm.
Even things like the registration certificate for the electrical contractor doing the wiring. It's about traceable liability.
Okay, so you've got this foundational file, this historical record locked down. How does that drive what actually happens on site moving forward?
That's where the risk assessment comes in. It's the heart of it all.
Right.
The contractor has to identify all the risks, evaluate how serious they are, and then crucially detail the safe work procedures to manage them.
And it's not just about falling objects or machinery, is it?
No, absolutely not. The specification specifically calls out analyzing and addressing ergonomic-related hazards. This is quite forward-thinking for Tunion 12.
That is interesting. And then who makes sure this plan is actually followed? The appointments seem very specific.
Yeah, they are. And yes, it creates an administrative load. You need a designated construction supervisor, competent safety officers, and health and safety representatives. The requirement there is one for every 50 employees if you have more than 20 people on site overall.
So a clear chain of command for safety.
Exactly. Structured oversight built in.
But what if, you know, despite all the planning, things start to go wrong? How does the employer's agent step in? What are the enforcement tools?
They have a clear escalation path. It starts with an improvement notice, basically. You need to fix this.
Gentle nudge first.
Sort of. Then it can escalate to a contravention notice. That demands quicker action. Rectify it fast.
And the final step.
The prohibition notice. That's the big one. It means stop the affected work immediately, full stop, until you can prove it safe again.
Okay, so clear consequences. Now, moving beyond the procedures and the paperwork, what about the actual worker on the ground? What does this spec mean for them directly?
Protection is paramount. Mandatory personal protective equipment, PPE, obviously. That's standard.
Sure.
But there's a unique bit here. Workers need to be identifiable. Their company name has to be printed on their overalls.
Ah, interesting. Direct accountability linked back to the contractor.
Precisely. And there's a strict zero-tolerance policy on drugs and alcohol. Anyone appearing under the influence isn't allowed on site, period.
And the facilities, I heard the requirements there are quite specific, too.
Very specific. It really speaks to setting a minimum standard for worker welfare, regardless of the site.
What are the numbers?
At least one shower for every 15 workers, one sanitary facility, a toilet for every 30 workers. Plus, they have to provide sheltered eating areas.
Those are tight ratios. It shows a real focus on basic dignity and health.
It really does. These aren't just nice-to-haves, they're mandated minimums.
So, wrapping this up, when you look at the whole picture, the detailed admin, the specific roles, the facility rules, it feels like this framework views construction safety less as just following basic rules and more about implementing total procedural control over absolutely everything.
That's the core takeaway, I think. It's about building an ironclad system. Identifying risks, mitigating them, documenting everything before an incident happens. It's predictive, not just reactive.
It's a massive shift, which leads us to a final thought for you, our listeners.
Yeah.
Considering the sheer number of mandatory appointments, the detailed documentation, the specific facility ratios, How does the administrative weight of such comprehensive safety requirements ultimately impact the speed and maybe even the cost of getting construction projects built? Something to think about.